The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Now I'd like to welcome Ms. Vandana Sue Sankar Ali, General Manager at the Child and Family Reintegration Services of the Children's Authority. Welcome to you, Ms. Sue Sankar Ali.
Good morning, Trinidad and Tobago. Thanks for having me.
So today we're talking about parenting and reported cases of child abuse, and this seems to be a very pertinent topic coming out of many stories that have been making the news within the last couple of weeks, last couple of months, etc. But before we get into that, I just wanted to, you know, give us a definition of the child family reintegration services. How did it come about, and what are the objectives of the services?
All right, so the Child and Family Reintegration Services is just one department within the Children's Authority that really focuses on services to children, case management services, how can we support the family, and how can we work towards permanent family environments for children. So the authority's philosophy is actually that We place a heavy emphasis on family-focused environments where we really try to build the capacity of families so that they are best positioned to care for their children. And so within the Child and Family Reintegration Services Department, we have units that focus on care, adoption, ensuring that children have the right kinds of assessments of themselves and their families so that we can make the right recommendations for them. And so there are many units within the authority that do work like this, but this is just where I reside at this time.
And the need for foster care, adoption, and the services that you just mentioned, how prevalent is it now as to, let's say, a couple years ago? Has it increased, decreased? What was the trend like?
Well, you know, the foster care system was actually in place long before the authority was operationalized, and it was being run through the National Family Services Division. So there was always a need for it. There was also the Adoption Board of Trinidad and Tobago that managed adoption services as well. But with the coming on stream of the Children's Authority, you know, we've done widespread sensitizations with the public, and especially because we also have such prevalence of child abuse cases, we see sometimes that there's a need for children to be received into state care so that they can, they are in need. They have to be removed from their family environment. They may not be able to stay with their parents. There may not be a family member or a friend of the family who can provide care for that child. And so alternative systems of care are required. And so we have been embarking on a heavy drive of trying to sensitize the public about presenting themselves if they are in a position to provide appropriate care for a child, to offer themselves up to provide foster care or to become an adoptive parent. And so we have been seeing steady increases over the years in the need for and the availability of these placement options.
And as I started off, we seen so many examples within the year already, from 2023 into 2024, where many children have been reported missing, cases of child abuse, and then the horrifying stories that we've come across with the 11-year-old girl, and most recently with the situation in Valsain. What role does the Children's Authority play in situations like these where the family, you already know that it is not suitable for the children to be with family members? How do we deal with these situations to make sure that the children find safe spaces?
Well, first of all, once the authority receives a report, we have to do an investigation to substantiate that report. And so part of that investigation involves interviewing family members as well as any other person, including the child, to determine, you know, what happened and what is needed to be able to support that child and that family. In several circumstances, it may be that that child can return in the future to that family home once the necessary interventions and rehabilitation have taken place. In some circumstances, the abuse is very severe, and there may be criminal charges that may have to be laid as well. So, what we do is we conduct assessments. We seek to have the necessary interventions provided for children and their families. Oftentimes, families are in need of their individual counseling because parents or other persons in the home may be dealing with their own trauma or their own mental health challenges. Substance use may be at play. We may have to get them parenting training, so that they learn how they can meet the needs of their child or children. And what are some of the areas of parenting development that they may need so that they can better care for their child? So the authority plays a role in accessing these services, linking families with the necessary services by working with our stakeholder partners. So we always say that child protection is everybody's business. And by that, we mean everybody has a role to play, including our stakeholders in offering the necessary services and community partner agencies as well to families so that they are better positioned to care for their child. And then if it is in the best interest of that child, then there may be a time where reintegration can occur, where a child can return to their family home with the necessary supports and monitoring.
What are some of the challenges that you face during this process? Because it seems to be a very delicate one, but can you tell us some of the challenges that you've faced so far?
Certainly. Well, I can say that the unfortunate reality is that the need for alternative placement quite often outweighs the availability of suitable placements for children. So, by that I mean there may be children who are in unsafe conditions and have to be removed from their home, but there are no persons in their family circle or social circle who are coming forward or are available to provide care for that child. And we believe, and it is international practice, that children do best in family environments. We don't want to remove a child and place them in the care of a stranger or in the care of a residential setting. But sometimes those are the only options that are available. So that is one challenge there. And this is a challenge that we use a lot to speak to families and communities to say that we need to come back together and become that village again that will rally around children and vulnerable families so that we can provide the kind of support that they need. That is one challenge. I would say another challenge is the fact that children, no matter how much their families have hurt them or may have hurt them, they ultimately want to return home. It is a very unsettling situation to have to be victimized, and then you also have to be it feels like punishment to children to have to be uprooted again and placed elsewhere. So in spite of, you finding a safe environment, sometimes children still want to return home. And that comes, therefore, with a lot of psychological issues that have to be worked through. And to help children understand why they may not be able to return home. And of course, we know that when children are dealing with trauma as well as other emotional issues that may present as behavioral challenges, sometimes accessing the kind of interventions that are required. I mean, they may not be readily available in the public sector. So there's a high cost factor attached to seeking these services in the private service as well. So, these are some of the challenges that we face. We face sometimes compliance from families themselves. We live in a society where sometimes families believe that nobody should tell them how they should raise their child. And so asking parents and guardians to enroll in a parenting course or to get involved in a counseling program, even in spite of telling them the benefit of doing so and how it will help their child and position them to better care for their child, sometimes we are met with a lot of resistance. And so it's really about education and empowering persons so that they can buy in into the process and see how it will really benefit them and their children in the long run.
I know that you just mentioned the you know, children wanting to go back home even after suffering through a lot of trauma, as you said. I would think that the plan of family, child and family services would be to reintegrate families, because I guess blood is what would be best in terms of a stranger, in, you know, if you had the choice. How does, as you said, the services that are provided by like counseling and so on, how effective is it at this point in time in Trinidad and Tobago, seeing as there has been the challenge as well to find, you know, qualified social workers? There seem to be, you know, few and far in between. How has that challenge been faced thus far?
You know, I actually don't think the issue is suitably qualified professionals. We have a lot of social workers, we have psychologists in the country who are well-trained, mm-hmm. but the demand for the service, again, exceeds what is available and what is available in the public sector. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes, a lot of these services can be accessed privately, but the costs are very high and sometimes unaffordable to the persons who need it. Mm-hmm. So as a result of that, you end up with very long waiting times and appointment time frames within the public sector, you know, to be able to access those services. But that is exactly one of the biggest challenges that we have. And I think, you know, all my colleagues in the social service sectors will bear me out on this, and that there is a lot of work to be done. But sometimes, one, the clients may or may not be willing to access the services, and then when they do, because of the demand, it may not be able to be done with the kind of frequency that may be required. So for example, if you're in a private practice, you may be able to see, and you're able to afford private services, you may be able to see that therapist or see that social worker every week.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are in the public service, you know, you may not be able to see them as often, and as a result of that, you know, the journey towards rehabilitation, it takes a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm. Because they, as you say, repetition and having the service available to you, you know, gives you that sense of comfort that you can, I guess, change and recover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to work through some of those root issues. You know, a lot of persons are dealing with their own unresolved trauma. And, you know, we have been passing down over time, over generations, you know, different ways of parenting, different lifestyles, different thought and belief patterns over time, and that tends to be replicated. A lot of people, you know, we still live in a society where mental health has its stigma.
Mm.
So a lot of people continue moving forward with their issues not being resolved, and that comes through in the way we treat our most vulnerable populations, which includes children and the elderly. And mm. so we at the Children's Authority see that a lot, where parents require the kinds of rehabilitation and intervention, psychological interventions, to help them deal with their own issues, but also build their capacity so that they're better able to care for their children.
And what you mentioned before, becoming foster parents and looking for citizens who would be willing to offer that service, what would be the criteria for citizens to become foster parents?
So I would invite the public to visit our website at www.ttchildren.org and check out our information on foster care, which outlines, you know, how the foster care process works, what it involves to become a foster parent. But essentially, you must be an adult. We entertain both single as well as married persons applications. You will be psychologically assessed, so that we would want to ensure that, you know, you are of sound mind, that you will not propose any risk of harm to a child who may be placed in your care. We would want to ensure that, you know, certain dynamics within your family are suitable and stable. We would want to ensure that you have the financial means to meet your own needs, so that the foster care stipend, which is offered to care for the child who's placed in your care, will be used for that child's needs only. Of course, you have to have the suitable accommodations,
mm-hmm.
to be able to provide care for a child. So we will do a physical assessment of your home to ensure that that is something that meets the needs of yeah. a child. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then we also would want to ensure that you do not have any criminal record that can pose risk to the child in your care as well.
And, well, we did speak a little bit about the time frame that would be applied to a situation like this. But let's say that all of those standards and requirements are met. What kind of time frame can someone look forward to in this process?
Well, once the entire foster care assessment process is completed and we have the approval to place that child, to place the foster parent on what we call a register of approved foster care providers, then as soon as we have that approval, we can have a child placed almost instantly in a very short measure, because as I mentioned, we have a high demand for placements for children. So as long as the profile of that foster parent, the child that they would like to care for, matches with a child who requires placement, placement can happen quite quickly.
Mm-hmm. And, well, as we talked about, there have been like an increase in cases, close to 3,500 to 5,700 cases of child abuse being reported to the Children's Authority each year. Is there a connection with the child abuse and children who are reported missing?
I didn't hear the last part. Children who are
reported missing.
Okay, so a child, you know, children, we don't have a direct link that we can make. Mm-hmm. What I can say is that children who may be reported missing may possibly be among the children who have been reported to the authority. And so these may be children in need of care and protection, children who have been deemed by the court as children in need of supervision. Those children in need of supervision typically are the ones who, you know, years ago would be called beyond the control of their parents, but the new term is children in need of supervision. And so sometimes they do present with challenging behaviors, which sometimes might include absconding away from the home. So it is possible, but not in all cases, it may not be so.
And from that situation where you can't really make a connection between missing children and abuse, but we know for sure that there are some parenting skills from years ago that may not apply now. Can you give us an idea of the updated parenting skills that should be applied moving forward?
Okay. So, you know, there's the age-old discussion about the appropriateness of corporal punishment. Mm. And I want to begin by saying that corporal punishment is still lawful for parents. And it is stated in the legislation that parents can exercise reasonable corporal punishment. And they are the only persons in the law who can exercise corporal punishment on children. Mm. However, what we know is that when parents are performing corporal punishment or utilizing that as a strategy, you do not ever do so from a calm mind. Most mm-hmm. times you are angry, you're overwhelmed, you're triggered by your child's behavior. And as a result, you have resorted to corporal punishment. Mm. But what we're saying is that it's very easy when you are not in control of your emotions to become very excessive with the use of corporal punishment. And that is what we have seen. And there is a line, yes, between disciplining your child and abusing your child. But that line is a very, very fine and thin line to walk when you are angry and overwhelmed. And so generally, we discourage the use of beating a child into compliance because it does not teach a child anything. Mm-hmm. So over the years, the research has shown that, yes, while a child may change their behavior because of a beating that they may have gotten, or licks, like we like to say in Trinidad mm-hmm. and Tobago, mm-hmm. it does not teach them what the right behavior is. All you have taught them to do is to not do the behavior for fear of a consequence, but you've not taught them what they should do instead. Mm-hmm. And what all they have learned is that I should not do this behavior if I will be found out. Where there is not the fear of punishment, they may still repeat the behavior. Mm-hmm. So more progressive ways of parenting or disciplining your child involves, first of all, more humane ways. it also involves teaching your child what is the expected behavior, not just what is the behavior that you do not want or do not expect. Building a relationship with your child and keeping the lines of communication are important as a proactive strategy. You know, you should not wait until the point of having to discipline your child to then be looking.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, to implement something to address the behavior. If you've been talking to your child and building that relationship from early on, building trust, you can engage in rational discussion and negotiation with your child, setting boundaries so that your child know what is acceptable within your home, understanding the values and norms within your home. You know, those things go a long way in helping children to know what is expected of them and giving them autonomy over their own behavior so that they also learn to be responsible for their behaviors. We also know that other methods such as the removal of privileges, you know, and taking away things, that's a very effective strategy still, you know, mm-hmm. especially children who love technology.
Yeah, I'm now about to say that. You take away the electrical cord for the Xbox or take away the charger for the phone, you know, and they
and
go berserk.
The Wi-Fi password.
Yes. And they go berserk, they go crazy. Yeah,
you know, so knowing what would really have impact upon your child, but also being very fair with your consequences. Sometimes in our anger, we can go overboard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that would warrant you taking away something from them or grounding them for maybe a couple of days. And then instead, you may see somebody doing it, going to the extreme, and they say, okay, well, you can't do this at all. Ever again, or you know, you're grounded for 2 weeks when it just means, you know, just 2 days they needed to have consequences.
So in other words, the punishment should suit the crime then, you know.
Correct.
Because I've been looking at, well, she's past teenage age now, but my daughter, I was looking at some ways of, you know, instilling that understanding, well, all right, if you've done these certain things, then there are consequences to your actions. And the idea of, well, she was involved in extracurricular activities, and at that point in time, she had a major game to go to. And, you know, it was suggested that you tell her, don't go to the game. And I felt that was a bit harsh for the quote-unquote infraction that she committed at the time, because this is something that she practiced for, something that she trained for, and she put her commitment to, and she was making the effort to, you know, turn up and be part of the team. So I think understanding what teenagers are involved in and what they like and the reasons for putting their commitment behind certain things could, you know, make us understand how they would feel if certain things are taken away and apply where necessary. Do you think that is something that we should be looking into? And I guess that would come from understanding and having that communication.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're spot on with your analysis of that situation, because as parents, it is our responsibility to be in the know, meaning to have the knowledge and to seek the information that will help us to understand our children better. So understanding what teenagers, in your case, are undergoing, what is the stages of development, how would they feel about certain things. And remember, as your child ages, they are also of increasing amounts of reasoning that you can engage with them in, you know. So you can't treat a teenager the way you would treat a very young child. And also as a young adult, or parent of a young adult, you also can't treat them the same way that you did for a early teenager. So your consequences also have to evolve. So understanding your child is important, but having communication, even when you, in that example you shared there, if you had opted to stop her from going to the game, or you gave her a different consequence, whatever it was, it's not enough to simply give a consequence and leave it there. You also have to sit with your child and explain to them and help them understand why you have reached this decision, and how this decision is expected to impact their future behavior. You know, so you're really talking through with them. They have the ability to engage in conversations.
And sometimes their experiences, well, obviously the times that they are growing up in is surely different to the times that I grew up in. and the things that they're exposed to and the understandings is quite different. You know, I think, if coming from you as well, you could guide me on this. The way in which we discuss things with teens, I remember having a conversation with one of the social workers from the Queen's Park Counseling Center stating that the things that you think teenagers don't know, they already know and probably have more information than you do. So to, you know, have the conversation from a perspective of, all right, I am all knowing and you know nothing, puts us at a disadvantage. How do we breach that gap and make that change within us as adults to, I don't want to say come down to their level, but have that understanding that there may be things that we don't know because the times are so different?
That's an excellent point that you've made, and I'm happy to speak about it. In the first instance, we need to seek the information. Stay in the know, stay knowledgeable. And, you know, we have the internet. Sometimes, you know, as an older adult, you may be inclined to say, oh, there's young people saying, I'm not dealing up with that. And, you know, you leave it like that. Mm. But especially if you have young adults or teenagers and children, you have to stay knowledgeable about trends, about what's happening, so that you, they don't have one up on you. You know, or they might still, you know, because this is a very savvy generation, but at least you are not completely left out of the loop and left behind. The other thing I will say is, again, keep the lines of communication open. Keep talking to your children. Show interest in the things that interest them. And if you don't know about something, ask them. They will tell you and they will teach you about it as well. When you build that kind of rapport and relationship with your child, it is very likely that they will come to you with things that they don't understand or things that are bothering them, so that they will seek the information from you before they seek it from somebody else. You know, so I am a big supporter of building parent-child relationships, because I really feel, just like any other relationship, communication and the quality of the relationship is really what is important in making it work. And the other thing I will say is that being able to do this takes a certain level of maturity, emotional maturity, on the part of the adult as well. So sometimes that means letting go of the archaic beliefs that, you know, I am in charge and I am the parent and you listen to me and I have authority over you. And, you know, those types of beliefs only contribute to power differences and just help to create the divide even further. Yes, you are the parent, but you must be an ally with your child. You know, your child has to see you as somebody that they can come to and rely on and not fear you because you of what you can do to them, you know? So when you build that kind of relationship, you have that kind of emotional maturity as well. It helps in being able to bridge the gap that exists. And I think also knowing when what your triggers are and when you can no longer cope, that is also an important aspect of being emotionally mature. So that parents need to have their self-care routines. They too need to have their support mechanisms of persons that they can turn to when they feel like they can't do it alone.
And this all points towards my next question. What are some of the great tips that you can give to break the cycle of abuse and the increase or the incidences of children going missing? Because as you said, these could be the triggers that make them leave home. So can you give us some tips before we close off?
Sure. So we've been talking about them throughout today's interview. I would say first and foremost, start early building a relationship with your child. It is not too late. In some circumstances, your relationship may be quite fractured, but you can work on it. And so build a relationship with your child. Seek the necessary intervention if you need it to help repair relationships with your child so that you can continue to have communication open and take a proactive approach to dealing with the issues. The second thing I would say is you need to be mindful of your children's whereabouts and who you leave them in the company of. you know, as a parent, you could never be trusting enough. And I think, you know, nobody wants to be in that kind of psychological space of not being trustworthy. But the reality is that we are living in a very dangerous time when it comes to our children's well-being. And so ensure that the persons who are entrusted to care for your child or children are persons that you can trust, are persons who you are aware of the strategies that they will use to engage in parenting of your child. You don't want to have to hear after the fact, you know, of how they mistreated your child. So be aware of the persons as well. You try to seek information for yourself in terms of ways that you can do better. You know, maybe you're not aware. Maybe you were taught that this is the way to do it. But if it does, you know, you're hearing so much information, if it doesn't sit well with you, you're seeing the effects on your child, then it's important to go out there and seek the necessary information and skills to be able to improve your parenting. And just get involved. Seek the interest of your child. Get involved with your children so that you know what they are doing. They can come to you first and teach them safety skills as well, so that they know the persons who are they can be safe with, that they know situations that they can avoid, you know, and that they know that there's always somebody that they can trust, that they can come to and speak about and speak to when things, you know, they have questions or they're not sure what to do.
And I would like to thank you so much, Ms. Yusanka Ali, for being with us inside Human Impact and just, you know, having that discussion again. Unfortunately, it has to be one that is repeated over and over again, seeing as there are so many cases of missing children out there. And we want
thank you so much for having me. And we're happy to continue the child protection dialogue and to remind everybody that child protection is everybody's business.
Yep. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll connect again. Take care.
Bye-bye.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.